Hey y'all, it's Barb.
It's Shay.
We're here to talk about a murder that's gonna knock you off your feet.
So giddy up, y'all. This is gonna be a wild one.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode with Barb and Shay. We are happy to be back for another week. Thank you for all your votes for the voters episode. I know Barb is excited for this case. How are you doing, Barb?
I am doing good. I had a great weekend, got to see a lot of family, and just excited to be sharing this episode coming up with you guys. How are you?
I'm good. Had a great weekend as well. Got to hang out with you guys and see a lot of people this weekend, so that was refreshing. But yeah, a great weekend. Real quick, we know we've been saying that we'll have the shirt soon, but they were put on delay for a minute, but we will get the shirts as soon as possible, but they are in the works as we speak. So thank you for all your patience, and let's get right into it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So I want to say that I got my info from WFAA.com, Newsweek.com, Medium.com, and TDCJ.Texas.gov. I was having a hard time finding like the backstory to this murder and like a bunch of information. They didn't even have a Wikipedia page for this, no Murderpedia, no nothing. So it was really difficult to find information, but I try my best to find everything I can. So I may not have all the answers that if you have any questions like throughout the episode, but I'll try my best, you know. But I just wanted to kind of get that out there before we started. So today I will be talking about a man who murdered his family, and for what? Well, you'll have to just listen to the rest of this episode and find out why he brutally murdered his family. Today I will be telling you all about John Hummel. I am going to tell you that this gets like really, really, and I'll probably say this again later, this is really gruesome, so just warning ahead of time. But I am going to say that he does get what he deserves in the end. And I truly think that he got what he deserved. So let's talk a little bit about the victims. And like I said, I couldn't find a lot of information, but the victims included Joy Hummel, the wife. She was 34 years old, and it included her unborn baby. She was pregnant. I don't really know how far along she was, but so her unborn baby, Jody Hummel, which was their child, and she was 5 years old and was only in kindergarten, and Clyde Bedford, who was Joy's father. So he was the father of the wife. So I found a sentence about, like, from Finding a Grave about Joy, and the family wrote for her and stated, quote, "Joy's smile and love for life could brighten any room. Her world revolved around her daughter, Jody, whom she loved more than life itself," end quote. And like I said, there's not a lot of information, so I'm just trying to pull that from there, just from what their family said. I also found a sentence on Finding a Grave that the family wrote for Jody, the daughter. Jody was born July, or quote, sorry. Jody was born July 17th, 2004 in Arlington. She was a kindergartner at Delaney Elementary School, end quote. I'm guessing since she was only five, they don't really want to put too much information out there. And then about Clyde, the family said, quote, "Eddie had many joys in life, but the greatest was his granddaughter, Jody, who was the light of his life. He also greatly enjoyed spending time at the Senior Citizen Center in Kennendale," end quote. I think that's how you say it. But yeah, so that's basically what was said about them. So it seemed like everybody was involved with Jody, the daughter. So yeah. So again, caution before we go into this, that it's very gruesome. So let's go ahead and start talking about what happened. So December 17th, 2009, it was nighttime at the time that this all happened, and all of the family was home. John, which was the husband, had a lot of things on his mind, but little did the family know that he was debating on what he should do with this family. So, see, John was having some problems because he was actually having an affair. So, like I said, there's multiple places that I got information from, and all of them said something different. Some said he was, or she was a coworker, or she was a corner store worker, or she was a friend, or there's like different things. So I don't exactly know how she correlates with him, but I'm not going to say her name because I feel like that's personal. Like I said, I'll tell you towards the end a little bit, but, you know, to me, I feel like if I'm going to be intimate with a person, I would try to learn more about them. But I guess when someone knows how to live two lives, it's a little different and they know how to disguise it. Because eventually she would find out that she would find out that he's actually married. She had no idea that she was married and that she was also expecting a child. And this affair had just started in 2009. So it wasn't long, but in that short time, John was obsessing over this woman. Like, he was obsessed with his mistress. And he wanted to be with her 24/7, all day, every day, never miss a beat. But he couldn't because he had a whole family. And like I said, she then found out that he had a wife and she was pregnant and she had no idea. And she broke up with him. She laid it. She said, nope, not doing this. And I think it's crazy that when a mistress has no idea about their partners being married, you know, people will bash others for saying, oh, you're with the married man, or oh, you're with a married woman. But sometimes they truly just don't know. And they'll just find out eventually. Sometimes they'll never find out. But I just think it's crazy to me that that can actually be a thing. So anyways, on December 16th, a day before the murders, John found out that his mistress's divorce was final. So she was getting divorced with her husband. And he found out it was final, and he went to her place. But this is whenever he would meet her daughter. And he would sit there and read stories to her and play with her and most likely show her more attention. Like, show her more attention than he does to his own child. And, you know, to me, I think that's always so weird that you can't show the same emotions to your own child that you created, but you can show it to others' children. I just think that's super weird. But after this visit, he went home. And to me, I feel like his mistress telling him about the divorce made up his mind and what he wanted to do and how he wanted to do it or whatever. But I feel like the divorce is the reason why he ended up killing them. Why he made the final decision saying, I'm going to do this now. She's free. I can be free if I just kill them. And I want to kind of backtrack. So let's go to December 17th, which was a day after he found out. John was standing in his kitchen with a knife in his hand, wondering what he should do. He stated to the police, quote, I remember standing there holding the kitchen knife, contemplating on whether or not to kill my wife for about 30 minutes, end quote. But unfortunately, while he was standing there thinking, Joy walked in and started talking to him, because to her, nothing was wrong. Nothing was happening. Everything was going on behind closed doors, so she had no idea what was happening, you know. I don't know if she kind of felt something was happening, like he was having an affair or whatever. But as far as I can see, she didn't know that it was happening for sure. But she walked into the room, started talking, and he started to stab her over and over and over. He stabbed her and the unborn child 35 times. Isn't that insane? Wow.
That's crazy. You know what this case reminds me of is the Chris Watts case.
Oh yeah, it does, because he was having an affair as well.
Yeah, and then murdered his wife and two daughters. So that rem this reminds me of that. And so it's like I'm like kind of comparing them, but like what? I don't understand that. I mean, how easy is it to just divorce? Like why you have to go all the way to the extreme?
That's what I'm saying, and it's just like, what? I don't understand. Like, I guess it's a mentality thing, and they just think that, oh, if I get a divorce, I can never get rid of them because we have children. But like, how does he know that his fling or mistress or whatever she is wouldn't be accepting of his daughter or his new child or whatever? Because it seemed like once she found out, she was still willing to make it work, but he would have to leave his wife. To me, that's what it seemed like, what was happening. But I don't know what runs through their head saying murder is the only option when it's not. But after stabbing his wife 35 times, he begins searching the house for the others. He would soon find that his 5-year-old daughter Jody, who was asleep at the time. She was sleeping, wasn't even bothering no one, wasn't even playing or nothing. And he would proceed to beat her with a bat. Let me say this again. He beat his 5-year-old daughter, who was sleeping, in the head until she was dead.
That's crazy. Like, I wonder if he was on some kind of drug.
I don't know. To me, I didn't see anything about the cops thinking he was on drugs or anything, but like, what kind of monster does this?
I don't know. I mean, clearly, if he wasn't on drugs, like, he clearly didn't. I mean, he didn't love his children. I mean, for 5 years or of that baby, girl's life and his wife, like, how do you love somebody and do that?
I just don't think he loved anybody. He just, I don't know. Like, this case blew my mind. I was like, I've never even heard of this. And for there not to be like a lot of information out there about it is crazy to me because of how brutal he was to his family. But he wasn't done. He wasn't over. He then would walk to find his father-in-law, who, mind you, was in a wheelchair because he was older. I don't know if he was wheelchair constantly, like 24/7, or if he just used a wheelchair most of the time, but he would find him and he would beat him with the bat as well. Like, what?
I don't understand how is nobody hearing any of this? Like he's going literally room to room and no one is waking up. I mean, there has to be loud. There has to be screaming, at least from his wife. And
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm like, I don't understand. How is nobody waking up or like realizing what's happening? I mean, if he's not hearing the beating from the bat in the room, like his wife should have been like screaming for help.
And to me, it feels like, yeah, he stabbed her 35 times, but she could have still been living for a while until she bled out. The daughter had no chance. She was sleeping and he came and attacked her while she was sleeping. So maybe she didn't have time to scream. But I feel like the wife being, it didn't say if the father-in-law was awake or not, but still, it's just like somebody should have heard something unless they were, because this is in Fort Worth. So I'm wondering if maybe because it was in the country, maybe they don't have neighbors. Because I don't know exactly where it was, but maybe they just didn't have neighbors, so nobody could really hear. But this dude is literally like a giant pile of dog poop. Like I want to say worse things, but we have to keep a PG-13 on here. But like, I don't understand how this can be a human being. But after he killed all three of them, he then proceeded to take toilet paper, pile them on clothes and lit them on fire while his family was still inside. So he lit his entire house on fire.
To cover up the DNA.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think he was just panicking because after he did that, he then left the Fort Worth area to flee to California, because what he was trying to do was go to Mexico. Because to me, I feel like that was, if you're going to kill your whole family and you're going to try to escape, because I think I saw somewhere where he said the only reason he tried to flee was because he had left his house after the fire and came back, and he was around the police. When the police officers arrived, he tried to act all shocked and surprised. Like he wasn't there and he didn't know or whatever. But then he ended up like seeing that he had blood on his pants. And so that's whenever he fled, because he had blood on his pants and he thought the cops were starting to suspect something. And of course, when they go inside, they're going to see like their family is dead. And eventually the autopsies are going to show that they didn't die from the fire. It's going to show that they were literally like destroyed. So I think he just kind of like freaked out and was like, oh God, gotta go. So okay. So maybe he did do the fire for like kind of covering it up, but he didn't help himself with that.
No, like how are you going to show up with blood on your pants?
Like maybe, and not realize it.
Yeah. Like, okay. I'm sorry, but one of the dumbest killers I've yet to hear about. How are you going to show up literally with evidence on your being? Oh, geez. They should have just arrested him right then.
For real. Just like, you just dumb.
Yeah.
I just see your face. You're dumb. But yeah, so he ended up trying to flee to California. And a few days later, he was arrested on December 20th. After he was stopped while trying to cross the border in
Tijuana,
Mexico. So I don't know why he thought that would work, especially since, one, he showed back up to his house after the fire. Two, he was the only one not dead in the house. And then, of course, when they do the autopsies, they're going to find out something was happening, you know. Even if they're really super burned or whatever, they're gonna find out, because they can see that there's knife marks or that their skull is completely smashed in, you know. So that was stupid. And then three, his face is everywhere. There's no way that they're just gonna like, oh nope, we're just gonna try to find them ourselves, we're not gonna send out an alert or nothing. Like, I don't think he thought that through very well. I don't think he thought anything through. Matter of fact, he don't think at all, clearly. But, yeah, so he was arrested, which is good, because they got him pretty quickly, which is a good thing for him to make up a stupid mistake and get caught. But he was taken in, and he told the police that he was a hospital security guard and that he killed his entire family because he was sleeping with another woman, which is basically like what I stated above. And the police also found evidence that he had tried to kill his family earlier by putting rat poison in their food, but the food ended up changing colors. And then they were like, no, I don't want this. This must be bad. Like, they didn't think anything of it. They just thought it went bad. Oh, so he already tried, but he's stupid. So we know that.
You don't even know what he's doing. Go back to freaking being a security guard.
For real. Just stay in your lane, my dude. But they also found that he had some mental health issues, clearly, which they think could be some of the reason why he did this. I think he's just dumb and made not even a mistake. He's just dumb. But in 2011, John was convicted of capital murder for the deaths of Joy and Clyde, and he was given the death penalty. And I don't know how they worked out every charge or whatever for Jody and Joy and Clyde, and like the baby and all that. I don't know. It didn't give too much information on that. But he was willing to do that to his own family. And like, I'm kind of in the middle for the death penalty. I'm like, not for it and not for it. Because there's so many different things that can go into it and so many different reasons why to do it, why not to do it. But to me, I feel like he got what he deserved. because, you know, there's all these stories about, oh, well, we were overpopulated, so we had to release all these prisoners because we have new prisoners coming in and so on and so forth. Like, I feel like if he would have gotten released, he would have killed more people and it would have just been terrible. It would have, because it, just to be able to kill your family that brutally, there's something happening, and I feel like he would have continued. So I feel like this was the right decision, and they could prove that it was him, and he even admitted it was him. And so to me, I think this is a good decision. So he was supposed to be killed in 2020, but in Texas, they had to put the executions on hold because of COVID. And in my head, I'm like, but why? Like, why? But I guess that's whatever they decided to do. But in 2021, he was killed by lethal injection, and his last words were, quote, be with Jesus when I wake, end quote. That's not going to happen. And then, quote, I truly regret killing my family, end quote. And then he said, like, then he would thank his friends and their prayers and their support or whatever. And then he said, quote, I love each and every one of you, end quote. No one cares what you have to say. I wish I could have found, like, what his last meal was, but I feel like it was probably something stupid, like something nasty. But they gave him a lethal dose of sedative, and about a minute later, all the movement stopped, and he was pronounced dead at 6:49 p.m., which was, like, 13 minutes later. The prosecutor at the trial said Hummel attempted to kill his family by putting rat poison in spaghetti dinner. And he tried to, I think they said that he tried to kill them another way, but I can't remember when I was researching it. There's just so many different things. And then he tried to, or then he killed them this brutal, in this brutal way. So to me, I feel like this is exactly what he needed. And they inserted the needle, like, into his arms. I forgot to mention that. Sorry. But yeah. I got a lot of my information from the AP News article, which was a good article. It had a lot of information in it. So if y'all want to, like, continue to read through some of the other stuff, like what the family said and what, like, some, I don't know. There's, like, just so much stuff on this thing, but it's not like in depth. It's just the same information just told in different ways, if that makes sense. But this giant pile of dog doo-doo is dead and can never hurt anyone again. And I'm so happy for that. But that's pretty much it, Barb. How did you like it? Do you have any questions or comments?
No. I'm actually really interested. I think I may look this one up myself, like, whenever I get some free time. Just because, like, I feel like it's so similar to the Chris Watts case, and that case blew up. I mean, it was all over every social media, every headline. Everyone knew about it. Everyone was talking about it. And it's like this one happens, and it's pretty much on the same level. I mean, he killed a lot of people. So it's like, why did this not make it to, like, the stations and, like, media, just like the Chris Watts did? So yeah. I'm curious to find out, and I've watched, like, every documentary with the Chris Watts one, so, and I'm curious to know if this one has a documentary that I could watch, maybe, like, on YouTube. So feel free to check that out, guys. I think I am, but I actually pretty enjoyed it.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad. Thank you all for joining today. Don't forget to tune in on Thursday for the voters episode. I'm super excited. And let us know what you think on our social media. On Facebook, it's Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder. Instagram is Texas Chicks Who Talk Murder with no spaces. Twitter, it's Texas Chicks Who with a number one. And don't forget to tell your friends about us. And last but not least, stay out of dark places and watch your back, because you never know who's lurking. Bye.
Bye.